If you're tired of dieting and stepping on the scale, you're lacking energy and confidence, and you're ready to harness your inner athlete, then you're in the right place. I'm Sherry Chaban, and in each episode, I'll help you to rebuild your fitness identity and empower your deepest transformation so that health and fitness are not just what you do, but who you are. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. This is great. It's always a pleasure to be able to meet passionate people that are passionate about, you know, fitness, focus, and, you know, in leading with passion a community of people and make a big change in this world. So I appreciate you.
Oh, I love that. And I'm so excited because we're about to geek out here. And I love the conversation that we're about to have because you actually dive into health in a very different approach than we would normally think. So you've been studying biomechanics and practicing biomechanics over 23 years on your patients and helping them improve their life. And I understand that your technique is called corrective sleep therapy, and you link poor sleep habits and daily lifestyle rituals to loss of cognitive function, arthritis, and pain. That's so intense, so intense. I can't wait to get into it. But before we do that, I'm so curious why this was your path. Why did you choose this path to help others transform their lives?
Well, I think, thank you so much for that introduction, but life leaves breadcrumbs, and I zigzagged into the world that I'm in right now. You know, I've been a chiropractor for over 24 years, a kinesiologist, exercise physiologist. So I love the study of biomechanics and then how the body works and how the body functions. And it was about 12 years ago, a very competitive mountain biker. I love, you know, to, you know, take high risks and adrenaline activities. And I was mountain biking and had a little bit of a crash, one of many. And about 3 days after that crash, my back really started bothering me. And then next thing you know, 3 days later, I'm in the hospital in the emergency room, hooked up on Dilaudid because I had herniated a disc. My entire leg was numb. I'd been a chiropractor at that time for about 15 years. And I'm like, how does it get to this? I personally had back pain my entire life. I had shoulder issues my entire life, always impingement. I thought it was from rock climbing, always back issues. I just thought it was from my, you know, mountain biking. So I had been making up all of these excuses, helping people with pain in my private practice, but making up excuses for my own life saying, oh, I'm just hard on myself. Oh, hip pain's normal for me because I do this and I do that. And then it wasn't until I was in the emergency room, lying down, fearing that if I would ever practice again, because like my leg was numb, thinking, how did it get to this? And I knew because I had taken thousands of x-rays that there was a pattern. So I just hadn't been able to put my finger on it. So what I did is I reviewed 3,000 x-rays, identified a pattern that I hadn't, you know, that, you know, wasn't, you know, in the textbooks. And then I started working with that. And the pattern is based on loss. And I started applying those laws to the way that the structure works in the very one in particular, it's body posture, adjust to head position. So I said, well, if my body posture through the writing reflex is adjusting the head position, I should be able to change this at night when I sleep. So I came up with all of these protocols, tested them and you know, tested, it went against the current, you know, mindset that's usually out there on sleeping position. And so I'm into the sleeping world, not because I wanted to help people sleep, but because I wanted to help improve their structure at night while they sleep, thus preventing pain and injury like I was in my entire life. So that's kind of how I zigzagged-ish into this world that I'm in right now.
Oh, I love that. Makes so much sense. And especially when we think about how many hours we spend sleeping, kind of unconscious. We're not really aware of the position that we're in. And I know my daughters wake up sometimes in the morning and they complain that their neck hurts, or oldest, she sleeps really weird. She sleeps on her wrist a little bit and on her arm. And sometimes I watch her and I have no idea how she does it. But the majority of us, whether our position on our pillow is accurate for us or even our mattress, I can see how that can impact ultimately how we feel throughout the day. But I want to rewind a moment because what I understand, and especially when it comes to chiropractic medicine, as well as osteopathy, is that Structure governs function. So I'm curious why you didn't go through maybe the more traditional routes as a solution to overcome your pain, which was to maybe adjust the spine or to make sure that the nerves are free to innervate and free essentially to do their job.
Well, the way that I explain it now, these concepts took me a lot of understanding, unfortunately, with my deep discomfort that I was having, is chiropractic is like this and osteopathy is like this. Yes, the structure of the spine directly affects the function of the nervous system. Absolutely. But your spine, due to your lifestyle, is like hard clay, right? Which the clay, when it's hard, it's not really moldable. So chiropractic care is like taking clay and then putting in water. That makes the clay more moldable. But if you still expose the clay to the same molds and the same lifestyle patterns, you're going to end up with the same patterns. Right. So you're not going to change anything. You're going to be dependent on the adjustment in order to just bite the mold. So now the theory that I use and the way that I explain it, very, very simple. Yes, we're going to adjust you. Makes a big difference in the way that the structure moves, how pliable it is, but it's still up to you to expose it to a different mold. We're all texting, we're all on our computers. We need to reverse what we call the damaging effect of the modern day lifestyle, and there's no better time to do it than at night when you're sleeping. So instead of reinforcing the damage at night, with forward head posture and tucked in, curled in like balls, we need to open up our spines. And we need to open up our posture and put our body into the right position to heal at night when we sleep. Whether we stay in that position or not, that's one thing. But that is why I went to, the difference of, listen, I need to, our body, our health is a product of our daily rituals.
Yes.
What we do ritualistically on a daily basis. And when are you in one position, arguably, for the longest in any other part of the day, and that's at night when you're sleeping. So it was just innately, apparent to me that I needed to fix my problems while I slept.
So well said. I love that. Okay, so let's rewind a moment. So you discovered that there was some sort of trend or a pattern that you saw according to thousands of x-rays that you observed. Now, I'm curious, when it came to you, Peter, how did you treat your back? What did you do to overcome your pain? And have you overcome your pain completely?
Yes. So what ends up happening, I don't know if this is on YouTube or the people are listening.
A little bit. Yeah. People are going to want to listen.
Perfect. The body should have these curves. So when you're looking at the body from the side, you should have a nice curve in your neck, nice curve in your lower back. And then through the thoracic area, there's another curve. So curves of our body are like the springs. So when you walk, the shock absorbers are the actual curves, not the discs. What the writing reflex says is when you lose the curve and you start to have this forward head posture, the body reacts. And this is what I picked up by giving your body a scoliosis by taking pressure off of what's called dura mater. So when you have a curve in your neck, when you lose that curve, you're going to pick up a curve in the lower back. So people have lower back problems with hips being out of alignment, hips being worn down, lower back pain, not because the problem's in the lower back, because it's reacting to loss of cervical curve in the neck. Now, what causes the lower back to curve is a muscle that's called the psoas major muscle. Your psoas, everybody works on their psoas, but the problem isn't with the muscle. The problem is with the neurology innervating the muscle. And the psoas is the only muscle in the human body that attaches directly to a disc. So when you have any curves or distortion in that lower spine, you have weakening of the discs and you're going to chronically have pain, and you can adjust the lower back all you want. But if you don't affect the neck curve, which is through the writing reflex causing that lower back imbalance, you never get at the cause of the problem. And that is what I picked up on those x-rays. So if you can imagine, I'm showing you an x-ray here. This patient right here has a straight curve. So the curve of the actual neck should be like that, a nice curve. And then if you notice, this one on this side right here has this one right here has a bent curve. That's a little bit more straight. and you can kind of see what's happening to the lower back curves. You end up picking up these scoliosis in the lower back due to loss curve. So as you lose the curve in the neck, you pick up the curve in the lower back. So you can adjust the lower back all you want. You're never going to affect that person's long-term pain unless you affect the biomechanics. And that's all happening through the neurology called the vestibular system or the proprioception.
Right, right. So essentially, maybe summarize it down a little bit. The non-weight-bearing structures become weight-bearing because they're compensating for the loss of structure elsewhere.
Non-weight-bearing structure. What do you mean by non-weight-bearing structure?
Like you were mentioning, weight-bearing happens in the curves, right? Not on the discs. And so when there is a disalignment and the structure changes, now the forces are going through different structures, forcing them to weight bear when really that's not their job. They're more maybe adaptive spine. Is that
right?
Correct?
So let's say the average individual, let's say a person should when they stand, if they're 100 pounds and they're standing on two scales, one person should put 50 pounds on one foot and 50 pounds on the other. When you start to lose the curve, the body is going to lean to one side. So instead of putting 50 pounds and 50 pounds, you're putting 75 pounds and 25 pounds. So now the body starts to lean. Mm-hmm. And then due to that, what happens is the spine will start to curve to bring the body back. So where a joint on one side is taking now 70% of the load and the other joint is maybe only taking 30, the one that takes a 70% of the load starts to, get irritated. You start to build up scar tissue. So where the body is supposed to work together in equal portions, once the body starts leaning, like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, you're going to cause stresses in different areas. You wear down knees, ankles, hips, you cause bunions. And that's all due to the breakdown of what's happening in the cervical curve.
Right. So interesting, this global approach, because normally when we have pain in one area of the body, we focus on that one area of the body to fix that area. However, the issue can actually stem from somewhere else. And now as a side effect, the pain shows up elsewhere. And so with this approach, and as an osteopath myself, I believe that not only are we treating the human body, but we're also treating their entire life. What is their lifestyle like? What is the level of stress that they have? And what's interesting is, again, how much sleep can impact a person's day-to-day life, including their mood, their recovery, and even reducing inflammation. So let's come back to then this restoration of structure during sleep. How did you start to restore your back pain or restore the natural curve in your spine to overcome your back pain using sleep adaptation?
Yeah, so what I started to do is I started to look at, when you come up with a concept or a thesis, or when you come up with a conclusion, or you're coming up with something that doesn't exist, right? New way of thinking. I wanted to base my new way of thinking on law. Like a law is something where you can't argue it. Like if you drop something,
gravity, yeah,
it's going to fall.
Right.
Like you may not think gravity exists, but it's a law. It does exist.
Right.
So the body has three laws that I based all of my, all of my procedures on. And the first law is that what I just said, the writing reflex basically stated body posture adjusts to head position. That's law number one. Law number two is Wolf's Law, which basically says that bone will deposit based on the stresses that are applied, right? So that's why if we're leaning more to one side, the bone's going to have more development on the side you're leaning to, and then you're going to have osteopenia on the opposite side because the body's adapting. Osteopenia doesn't affect one hip versus the other. It's just the way that you're leaning, and the body deposits more bone there. And then the third is tissue will restructure based on the stresses that are applied. So if you want a bone, let's say my arm is straight. If I want to be bent, I would take my arm, I'd hold it like this for a year, and then I'd stop holding it like that, then the arm would bend. So if you can bend bone in structure, you should be able to reshape something.
Right.
So in the way that you reshape something is a light stress over a long period of time. And you take 8 hours at night when you're sleeping, where I believe people are doing damage over a period of time. Look at the structure, understanding what the structure should look like. So if then we can place the body into such a position where we can restructure and put the body into alignment and allow the body, if possible, to stay there, you do that over, let's say, 2 hours a night. You multiply that by 7 days, that's 14 hours a week of restoration. You might multiply that by 10 weeks, that's 120, 140 hours of having the body restructured and healed just at night while you're sleeping.
Mm. So this is like, I feel buildup of the suspense because I'm like, now, Kate, what is it, Peter? Like, come on, just tell me. I just want to know. So what is it? What are we doing while we're sleeping to help remold the spine?
Well, now, So I'm going to put the hashtags and asterisks and stuff like that. When I show you this position, you're going to say, no, I can't do it. No, that's not possible. And then all of the limiting beliefs, which I had, right? So I can still remember when I was, say this story often, when we were never taught how to sleep correctly. We were taught to go to bed, right? There's a very distinct difference. All right, bedtime, go to bed. I remember when I was 6 years old, I was, grew up on a busy street, city street. On the other end, there was a bus stop, and I was on the back, on the front porch. Headboard was against a window. So I always thought somebody was going to smash through my window. They were going to kidnap me and then take me away.
No, why did you think that, Peter? That's so traumatic.
I know, but this is how I internalized. So in order to do that, I would sleep curled up in a ball because I felt safe, pillows around my head and stuffed animals around me. And I would sleep facing a crucifix, and I would sleep in a ball, and I would feel safe. So when we fall asleep, we go to bed feeling safe, a position where we feel comfortable and safe. So when I give you the position that you need to be in to restructure the spine, it's a very exposed position. And most people, when they look at this, they say, I can't do that. Well, then we have all of these, back end, education stuff to teach you how to overcome the feeling of lack of safety, I guess you can say. But we're putting the body into a position that is going to nurture the curves. Mm-hmm. So we want in the body, actually, the body has one more law. When you support it, you make it weaker. Mm-hmm. So if you support anything, you put an arch support, you're making the support weaker. Back support, back's going to be weaker.
Right.
You use a cervical support, or you use a pillow that supports the head, you're making the spine weaker.
Right. Yes.
So we want to be able to put something under the neck and then use the weight of the head over the back. So it basically kind of hangs down like a slinky, mm-hmm. and it's lightly distracting the cervical spine, which gently stretches the curve back into the neck over a period of time. And the only way to do that is on your back, not just being a back sleeper, but placing your pillow in a very specific position. Mm-hmm. And the way that I did this before I developed a neck nest, which I'll show you, but the way that I did this before I had developed a neck nest, I would take my pillow, and instead of putting it flat, because a pillow defined is a support for your head,
right?
I would put it on its angle like this. And then I would put it underneath my neck and just let the weight of my head hang off the back of it. This sounds so uncomfortable, but when I put people in this position, it is so comfortable. And yes, things are going to come up where there'll be airway issues. You won't feel safe. You may, your back might hurt. There are things that happen once you start doing this, but I'm going to show you the position right now. And you only need to start out in this position for 1 hour a night. Then whatever happens in the middle of the night happens.
So this is similar to spinal molding, which is what we do in yoga.
Spinal molding, I'm not familiar with, but I'm sure what you're doing is you're probably putting yourself into a position, holding it, and then retraining the tissue to hold a specific position.
Right. Yeah. And there are special bolsters that we put under the cervical and lumbar spine, and then it restores the curve over time. But This is genius throughout your and while you're sleeping. All right, so Peter's lying down and he's on his treatment table and he's got a little rolled up pillow under the cervical spine. Is there a particular level, Peter, that you put it on? Is it C4, C5, or is it just where it's comfortable?
Basically, the way that this pillow is designed, or neck is designed, the base goes against your shoulders, and the back goes under, so your occiput, the back of your neck goes under, and the entire pillow squishes underneath, and because it's a down fill, it distracts slightly.
Right.
So as you compress it, it comes back at you slightly, and then it holds your neck into that position. So what I'm doing is, if I was to use, let's say, a regular pillow, right? This one will extend my neck a little bit too much, but you can put it on its edge. Mm-hmm. You get the whole thing under the neck. And then the key is making the weight of the head hang off of the back of the pillow. You right. don't want to support the head too much, because when you support the head, you're going to make the cervical curve weaker. You want at least 50% of the weight of the head to hang off the back of it, so it distracts slowly at night.
All right. So I see that you're just focusing on the cervical spine
yes.
to restore the lumbar spine. Would there be any other scenario where you would also restore the curve of the lumbar spine?
When you lie on your back, your back naturally goes into extension.
Yes.
So that's why people get discomfort, because they can't take a lot of that extension in the low back, because when they lose their curve, the older somebody is, or the more damage they have to the curve, the lower back going into extension can cause pain. So some of the things that we do to alleviate that, we put bolsters underneath their knees. We change the angle, but you're only changing the angle temporarily, because you want to be able to allow somebody to stay in that position as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Eventually you take off of those, you know, you take those bolsters out, and then that's how you establish the curve in the lower back. The curve in the lower back actually happens by creating an arch.
Right. So you mentioned also earlier that in addition to the low back pain that kind of just developed after your accident, you were complaining of pain in the hip, I believe, and in the shoulder. So you had all this other stuff going on. So how did starting to practice this particular technique impact those areas as well?
Well, so I used to have an impingement syndrome. So basically, an impingement syndrome is when the shoulder rides too high up in the capsule. And then when you're good as long as you're down here, but if you go to take a briefcase and go to put it out here, end up getting pain in the shoulder. That's because the shoulder rides up too high.
Right.
Well, what's the most common reason for impingement syndrome is when somebody falls asleep on their shoulder.
Right.
And you're jamming the shoulder into the capsule. So most of my patients that come in with impingement are side sleepers.
Mm.
So I tell people, you give me a shoulder problem, I'm going to give you a side sleeper. You give me a hip issue, I'm going to give you a side sleeper, because they're going to twist those spines. So I never have shoulder problems anymore at all, ever. I have never had a back issue since my back herniated, except last week. I had a little bit of an issue, but it was only for three or four days, and then it goes away. That's normal. I mean, you can do, like, I had a flood in one of my warehouses. I'm lifting these huge, heavy boxes and twisting them over, just like working out for the first time. You work tissue out, it's going to swell, and you're going to end up with discomfort. Discomfort and pain is normal when you stress the tissue a specific way. But what's not normal is that you're sitting here like this and you can't move, and in that last 1, 2, 3 weeks, that's not normal. And that happens on a regular basis. That's not normal. So now I'm in less pain as I'm 50 than I was when I was 35 years old, because of restructuring at night when I'm sleeping.
Right. Okay. So I'm receiving this, and I'm sure other listeners as well. I'm thinking, man, I'm a side sleeper. So like, what does that mean? Ever side sleep? So what do I do, Peter? Do I have to do this bolster thing every single night? I know you mentioned it was just for a couple of hours.
Yeah. That's the number one objection I get, because, you know, and I, you know, have done, you know, podcasts with Dr. Gundry, who's a cardiologist, and, you know, and first thing he's like, well, okay, look, here we go. You know, the elephant in the room. I'm a cardiologist. I tell my patients to sleep on their side. And You know, the research states that side sleeping, side sleeping, side sleeping. And then we go back to, and I say, all right, so side sleeping. So let's look at the side sleeping studies. And the side sleeping studies, the one that people use as like the gold standard is one that talks about what's called glymphatic drainage, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Glymphatic drainage, it works better on your side. So then there's a statement in there that says, well, then we're going to extrapolate this and then apply this to humans because that study was done on rats. And if you look at the spine of a rat, and especially the cervical spine, it's very different. It's actually opposite the cervical spine of a human. Mm-hmm. So yes, when you look at a rat sleeping on its side, that spine is designed to sleep on its side. Our human frames are designed to be on our backs, where your weight is distributed over the greatest surface area. Mm. So for those people that fall asleep curled up in a ball on their sides, that's due to a protective mechanism. That's damaging. I don't care which. I have my patients always do a challenge if they test me on this. I say, all right, fall. So get into the position you fall asleep in and try to watch a 2-hour movie and tell me if it's possible. Mm-hmm. It's not, because the position you're in is not sustainable. The average individual is going to turn 40 times a night because they're in pain or discomfort. So what I tell people is, I say, this is what you got to do. You don't have to be a back sleeper the entire night. I just need you to start 1 hour a night in your back in a position that untwists the spine and gives your body better alignment. Then in the middle of the night, if your body tosses on its side, that's fine. Let it toss on the side. I only want to own your sleep ritual. I only want to own how you fall asleep based on the positioning, how you use your covers, how you put, what position you put your body in, and then let the subconscious do what it's going to do at night. Mm-hmm. Don't try to control your entire sleep pattern. Try to control just the first 5 to 10 minutes and give your body the best chance for success.
Oof, I like that. That's so good. You're just full of passion. It's so clear. You're super excited about what you do. You're super passionate and you have this beautiful energy about you. You glow in this beautiful radiance of knowledge and excitement around just believing that somebody's going to hear this today and benefit from it in some way. And so now I'm super curious about your life, because I'm just curious about people. I just, like you observe patterns, I also observe patterns in people. And I always try to just find, like, what is that same common pattern that I notice in this person as I do in this other person? And so someone such as yourself, we're just gonna take a little bit of a trajectory here. Someone such as yourself, who seems to me highly successful, whatever you want to call success these days, but highly successful in that you are so effective in how you communicate and effective in what you do to help others. How do you create balance in the rest of your life, Peter?
Well, so in order to have this amount of energy, right? So let's picture, and balance is purpose-filled. It's very conscious, purpose-filled, right?
Yes.
Balance doesn't just happen. Passion doesn't just happen. Success doesn't just happen. Mm-hmm. You fuzzy targets don't get hit. Let's say I say, okay, let's travel west. If I travel west, I'm in Boston. Without a direction, I'm going to just end up somewhere, right? Well, instead of saying, okay, I'm going to drive to Chicago, then every road I take, whether I want to veer off this way or veer off that way, is always direction to what's called a true north. Mm. So when you, in order for somebody like me that has a lot of energy, that has a tendency to have ADD, well, I have ADD, right? That brain that requires just a lot of mental capacity can go enthusiastically in the wrong direction and then end up tearing yourself apart, which I've been very low of lows, you know, mm-hmm. based on stuff that have gone on in my personal life years and years and years ago. So coming out of that, I need to be very purpose-filled and conscious about my energy. So I think of my body like this. I think of it like a cell phone, right? Or iPhone, let's say. The more apps that I'm going to have running on that phone,
yes,
I need to plug it in more at night. If I want to have one app, well, I don't have to plug it in too much. I run high octane. So in order for me to run at such a level and have this amount of energy, I unplug and I really am very conscientious about my life at night when I'm sleeping. Hmm. Very self-disciplined at night. And then, so you have to have purpose. You drive purpose. With high intensity, I exercise. That's how I kind of, you know, I burn off my stress. I don't always eat good. I need to lose a couple pounds because I just ate my way through Europe. But I have a very conscious life where I know I'm going to put that in. So I'm very structured in my life, and my brain and my the way that I live works a lot better when I have these railings as guides keeping me in the direction of my true north.
So good. So what is balance then to you? Because you mentioned something around that and around managing your energy. How do you manage your energy in order to have balance? And what does balance mean to you?
So balance is when you're able to have a few different areas of my life. I have my health, right? I have my family, and I have my relationship. And then I have these core values that I have. So my number one core value is fun. I love to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
I love, and then I love family. Mm-hmm. I love to be conscious. I love to live a conscious, purpose-filled life to maximize my impact on humanity. So what does that mean? I don't like to just let life fly by.
Right.
I love to be able to smell the roses and see the trees and be grateful for what I have. Well, where does gratitude come from? I'm from Boston. I never was able to shut down my brain.
Right.
So when you run up here, you need to balance it with other things that bring you down here. So I do a lot of meditation right before we got on this call. I don't know if you saw, but I sniffed a scent. Well, what did that scent do? Well, I've meditated and I've had heart rate variability monitors on me. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to get my brain down and been able to control my blood pressure, be able to control my respiratory rate, be able to control the vitals that I know puts me into balance. I've done it so much with this scent. All I have to do is use a scent and then that brings me down. Then I can focus. Wow. So I have different things and strategic biohacks that I do to be able to keep myself balanced throughout my life.
So good. I did that with frankincense one time. That's my favorite one. Was that frankincense?
No, that one's just lavender, but I have many patients that do it with frankincense.
Yeah. And then it puts you in this state. So the more you associate yourself with that smell and that state, you can bring yourself back with just that smell. And it's super interesting what you say, because balance, actually, we think that balance means equal time and all of the things. And I don't actually believe that anymore. I used to in my younger day. But now I find I'm more balanced when I spend more time with my kids and I spend more of my time in purposeful actions, as you mentioned, when I'm conscious, when I'm super aware of what I'm doing and there's an intention around what I'm doing. And I've noticed too that as I'm aging, I don't know if you feel the same, but as I'm aging, I start to see every single moment in a very, very different way. And energy is the currency in which I operate. And the amount of energy that I put towards something that's my focus or put towards certain people, it has to be so meaningful. And I feel that as I get older, and I think this kind of started when my mom passed away some years ago in 2019, I think it kind of started that way, where you start to see your energy as almost being finite. There's abundant sources of energy and we can connect to that abundant source. We're able to actually hold is finite, and we have to keep reconnecting in order to really feel that state. And there were so many days where I would spend a lot of time on things that I didn't really feel were super aligned with me. And by the end of the day, I would feel extremely drained, very exhausted, and not fully recovered in a way where I was able to give to others what I really wanted to get.
So that's really interesting that you put it that way, because one of the number one things that people want to feel, right, is they want to make a difference. They want to have impact, right? Mm-hmm. At a fundamental level, they want to contribute. Well, most people, you know, in our fathers, our brothers, our preachers, and our teachers all define our mental state, basically. Yeah. They define what's called our paradigm. And our paradigm is what we believe and drive our actions. And our actions, like we said, are the things that, you know, either whether you drink a glass of milk in the water morning and you wake up, or you drink a glass of water, that's driven by your belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at our culture, right? Most people, what they try to do is they try to like balance their strengths and their weaknesses. Oh, I got to work on my weaknesses. I got to work on my weaknesses. And they let the strengths, because it's their strength, they let it diminish. You know, one of the best advice I got, listen, heck with the weaknesses, right?
Right.
You know, just support your weaknesses with people around you. You want to work on your strengths, because when you work on developing your strengths, you're more in line with where you're going. And that goes with relationships too. We all want to you know, help people. Mm-hmm. So we tend to focus on the relationships that need the most amount of work, and we don't work on ourselves and moving ourselves forward because we've never been taught to do that. Mm-hmm. We're only taught to really work on weaknesses, work on helping others. Well, what about contributing by being the best you and then being able to work on others, like stuff that you're doing? Because now you're leading, you know, one of my other core values is leadership. I love to be a leader based on very transparent principles. I'm a very congruent individual with how I live. Like, people over my house and I need to go to bed at 9:30, 9:45, I'm going to bed. I'm sorry. I have kind of like a structure, but you know what you get. And the more authentic you are about you, and the more clear you can get with who you are, then you can become a more purpose-filled, balanced individual, as far as I'm concerned.
So good. So good. Okay. I want to keep talking to you for like another hour, but I'll ask you one last question, and it's around boundaries. How do you set boundaries for yourself and for others when it comes to not just your practice, but also your personal life?
Well, boundaries take self-discipline. I mean, in order to set a boundary, you need to know who you are and what you stand for. So if an individual's looking to, let's say, go down a path, they're emotionally, they want a little bit more stability, they're not happy with where they are, they have unexplained underachievement, and they're trying to pull things back together. First thing I would say is go take a test, like a Strength Finders test or, you know, something, and then identify what your strengths are. Then second, I would say, all right, then look at core values. Look at a list of core values and pick out your top 10. And then hone them down to like how you want to, like where you see your world. Like, what are your top 5 core values? Use those core values as a prism on how you set your boundaries, right? So if I'm going to put myself in a situation I'm not going to have fun, that's not part of my core value. Right. Even though I'll have fun in most situations, but I want to, you know, I want to express my yeses through my core value lens. So then what I do is I choose, like, tonight's Tuesday night. I mountain bike. Yeah. I mountain bike with a bunch of friends. I do that every Tuesday night, like a ritual. Tomorrow I wake up, I go to work, I have a salad at lunch. I don't eat in the morning. And then when I come home, I'll have something small, and then I'll have a little bit of family time. And then so every day I'm doing something during the week. And it's when I'm on vacation, or it's when it's the weekend that or something's out that I'm not in that structure, is when chaos happens.
Right.
So I think you build the structure through identifying that, through a whole host of what your core values are based on what your strengths are.
So good. I love that. And I think it's incredibly important. And sometimes we forget that that's part of our health, and not just overcoming physical pain and overcoming any struggles in our life, but really understanding where our boundaries are, especially for ourselves. So Peter, as we wrap it up today, is there anything else that you wanted to share that didn't have a chance to yet?
Well, this conversation went much deeper than I expected, which I love. I love this type of stuff. So one of the reasons why, you know, that I am where I am today is because in order to be here, at some point in your life, you know, you had some challenges.
Yes.
And when I work with people, like, love when they say, oh, you're lucky. You're so lucky. You're so lucky. You're so lucky. Oh, it's you. You're lucky. And then I send them 6 emails that I wrote about my whole life story and, you know, where I came from. And in order to bounce back from lows of lows, or to be this happy, doesn't happen by mistake. Happiness doesn't just happen. You need to be, you know, you need to be the change you want to see in this world. So if you're at a place and you're listening to this where you're like, you know, you seem so clear, or, you know, you're you, I was you, you know, and where, you know, regardless of where you is, we're all at the same place, and we all have these hardships we need to work from. And instead of getting a new job, or instead of, you know, trying something new and looking for new down the street that's going to change your life, I'm going to tell you, changing your life happens with a pen and a piece of paper, and just writing down stuff about you. Learn who you are. You know, just write down stuff. It's the toughest stuff to do, to get into your own brain, because there's trash in there that you've shut these doors. And open up those doors and have a little conversation with yourself, and then really introspectively try to do that. And if you put the time in promise you, even just 5 minutes a day or 10 minutes a day, I know that sounds cliche, but it makes a huge difference. It's a game changer for you down the road.
So much value right there. Just that part. And I can't stress it enough how important it is that we all fail. And the difference is some of us just don't give up. They don't see that as a dead end. And we all have it hard and everyone has a story. And so thank you for sharing that beautiful, beautiful insight. I have enjoyed every single second of this conversation, Peter. And now I'm going to get you back on because now, see, you leave it with like this cliffhanger. Now I have to know about your life story, those 6 emails. Ugh, damn it. Okay, so we're going to have to schedule another one then. Peter, thank you so much for your time. This was absolutely incredible. If somebody wanted to reach out to you to learn more from you or to connect, where can they go to do that?
Yeah, they can either go to necknest.com. That'll teach them a little bit about the sleeping position and how you can transform your pillow, or you could do it with a neck nest, or on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok now. We're at Dr. Sleepright, Dr. Sleepright. And that's my handle, I guess. And we just post all sorts of content there and, you know, teaching you about, you know, sleep timing and positioning and how to sleep with a spouse, or, you know, the different content on sleep. So it's free. It's fun to watch. And we have a great time with these videos.
Amazing. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness. Whether you're already on your fitness journey or just getting started, we're in this together. Just head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win my 6-week transformation course. Then go to fallinlovewithfitness.com and get your free gift from me so you get back your energy and reinvigorate your life. Join me on the next episode, and remember, you are an inspiration.